Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Jason Pristinario, Head of Data Science at Komodo Health. Thanks again. I do want to talk about the first thing that obviously comes to mind is, I read based off you on kind of your profile that it was mechanical engineering was kind of something that is how you started out. I love that, first and foremost. And I am curious to know, like, how that kind of how easy that transition was from going with like a kind of heavily mechanical engineering background to now all of a sudden into, you know, kind of data science and kind of computer based. Was it kind of a transition period for mechanical engineering where they were kind of computers were being incorporated more and more, or kind of what's your background? What's the story there?
Yeah, no, so for sure. I mean, I think mechanical engineering, one of the things that's pretty amazing about it is there's a real breadth of the types of things that you can, the type of directions that you can go with it. And so, for myself in particular, I had, and I remember it was ME203 is the sort of machine shop class, right, at Stanford. And, that's a class that was fun to do once, but I was like, this is not for me, right? Like, My interest in mechanical engineering and eventually when I did my graduate work was really based in energy, right? Kind of modeling, energy modeling. So my degree was basically my mechanical engineering, but then I went on to get a sort of concentration in energy systems and actually to some extent high temperature gas dynamics as well. So they were kind of, highly analytical and highly sort of modeling-based degrees where, the focus is really how do we understand the sort of principles behind how to think about modeling a system, and then how do we actually put the math behind it and then the computers behind it, because, frankly, other than some very, very simple, situations when you're thinking about, some of the differential equations that you have to do in that realm, other than the very simple ones, right? Like everything's computer-based, right? It's all numerical, methods and simulations and things like that. So I got actually very sort of used to and comfortable and actually excited about sort of, applying code to a problem and actually using what computers do best to actually allow these models to be built and allow these things to be expressed. So in my sort of master's degree, I was definitely spending most of my time modeling jet engines or, car engines or fuel cells or rockets or power plants. But that idea of, hey, here's, what the world should look like. And in fact, in a lot of cases, being in the lab and seeing actual data, how does that sort of get fit to this model? And does my model seem to make sense? Sort of very intuitively understanding, I had a great professor who always used to say, all models are wrong, some models are useful, right? And he didn't make that up. That's a pretty famous quote, but it was something that really stuck with me. That's all to say that that's sort of all of what I just said really also applies to, data science and analytics kind of beyond anything that's necessarily in sort of the mechanical engineering or energy world. And so for me, it was actually, don't get me wrong, it was a process. To sort of continue to ramp up on all the things that I needed to additionally know and learn. But it was one that that transition actually made a fair amount of sense. and was something that was pretty not kind of a complete 180 for me to sort of transition more into the data science realm.
Was it helpful as well to have had the kind of mechanical engineering, and there's like a physicality element to it, so it's like understanding what the problem is in like a physical capacity? I think sometimes that I certainly get this. It's difficult to sometimes perceive and keep that goal or that vision that you have when you're starting to work on an analytics project or an analytical project. And you get kind of so lost in the actual projects and the numbers. But when you actually have that kind of physicality behind what, you know, you're trying to solve, one, it probably engages you more, but two, it might help with like the clarity of like what you're working towards as well. But that would just be my assumption, I suppose.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're spot on. It's actually something that I think about a lot, even when I'm recruiting people at this point, and even when I'm sort of talking to people, you know, if it's more kind of mentorship or whoever that's sort of saying, you know, what are the things I should pursue, et cetera, right? It's, you know, whether it's mechanical engineering or any type of engineering or even computer science, to your point, if you can really sort of be grounded in what is the thing that you care about, right? What is the impact? I think that actually goes a really, really long way towards actually allowing you to make progress on your goal, right? Because I think, especially in data science, and, you know, caveat, I think data science is this, you know, overused word that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. However, there's really not a better phrase out there, so I certainly use it myself. But I think a lot of people approach it from a very sort of just, they want to approach it from a very theoretical perspective, and I kind of get it, right? I mean, you know, when you focus a lot on, you know, what are the latest methods and, you know, what are some of the interesting things that people are doing that are on the cutting edge, you know, it's very theoretically based. It's very sort of, you know, dare I say numbers based, although obviously everything's numbers based. But it really, you know, kind of gets, can be stripped away from, you know, what your goal is and what your intent is. And I think there's, you know, a ton of different things that I've seen in my career where people kind of make this mistake, right? They, you know, really focus on, you know, hey, can I make the best model that there is, right? You know, what is my error? Can I eke out a little bit more performance? And you have to step back and say, well, what are you even modeling, right? Like, what is the question you're asking? And why is that important? Why is that meaningful? What does that do for you? And I think that's something that, you know, is a very, very, very common sort of failure mode that I see in people, you know, starting out in the data science realm. And I, to your point, to just sort of bring it back, I absolutely think that because I was always focused, you know, sort of in my kind of formal training on a very real sort of goal and intent in mind, right? I mean, I was modeling a real system, right? And sort of the point was, can I model that system effectively? And again, you know, going back to sort of my, you know, my professor and sort of his saying, right, like, I don't care if I have a perfect model because there are no perfect models, right? What I care about is am I accomplishing my goal with this model? Am I doing something that I want to do in order to kind of push forward? And so absolutely, I think that's one of the things, you know, when we look for, and when I look for data scientists, you know, if there is sort of that background where it's clear there's sort of that understanding of, you know, first principles, what do I care about and what's driving behind that? I actually very much see that as a positive, and in fact can be a little bit of a red flag if someone is sort of so sort of theoretical and so numbers, again, numbers isn't really the right way to say it, but, you know, so focused on sort of the theory behind data science and not have that sort of experience with, but what's the point?
Right, exactly. Well, I think what you have is people who are motivated and engaged by numbers are just looking for options to mesh with numbers, right? And it's, I think it's one of those things, and this is the difference between, I think, something that you enjoy doing and a job, right? And it can be, you can draw comparisons to pretty much anything that people would do for a hobby versus you know, doing for a job, you know, you have to kind of adapt what you enjoy doing to seek out, you know, business purposes. And I think that maybe there's a transition there from, you know, even people coming out of college or their masters to into the real world. There is kind of that element and that kind of graduation into the working world that sometimes people kind of miss. And also people who are just genuinely passionate about things. Sometimes they're so good and they're so passionate about things that you have to actually give them a shake and be like, right, we know you love this, but we have like an end goal and a problem that we're trying to solve here as well, and that's what essentially all that you need to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I would say is, right, like this is kind of the academia, right, versus industry. And, you know, if you are sort of, you know, hey, this is what I want to do, I'm passionate about really sort of exploring this and really kind of focusing on, you know, kind of seeing this play out in the numbers and seeing sort of these different techniques and models and really pushing on that, you know, great, right? Like academia is amazing. And I'm not, you know, certainly not one to, I mean, that's how we sort of start making progress and continue advancing, right? And so if that's what you're interested in, I mean, I think that's amazing. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is just a very different mentality. And, you know, what I would liken this to is, you know, I think throughout sort of my career, I've, you know, worked with a fair amount of people and that sort of are coming out of a PhD program. And, you know, I myself did not get a PhD, but I think I've had enough experience with those kind of folks now. And it is a very different mentality. And it takes, you know, sometimes it takes, you know, a year, right, to really break yourself out of that mentality. I mean, it can take people a long time. And once they do, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people that sort of end up in the data science realm, a lot of them tend to be PhDs of some degree. And I think part of the reason for that, right, is you have a fair amount of sort of necessary breath, right, when you're going after a PhD in terms of sort of your skill sets, right? You know, for example, if you're going to go and do, you know, any type of engineering PhD, you know, that's sort of computational in nature, you know, to the point I made earlier, right? Like, you're going to have to know how to, you know, you're going to have to code and you're going to have to be relatively technical in order to actually make any progress, right, in terms of your research. And so I think that lends itself pretty well to sort of the multifaceted skill sets that's sort of inherent within data science. But I think that one sort of last piece is, you know, when you come out of that, you really need to sort of figure out how to transition yourself into, frankly, just a different focus.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. So data science now, I mean, as it is today, I perceive it to be quite sexy now, I think. Data science, right? When did that all change? Because data never used to be sexy. Why is it all of a sudden such a sexy thing right now?
Yeah, that's a pretty funny question. So, you know, I think, so what's interesting is, I don't actually know at what point in my career I would sort of officially say, you know, okay, now I'm a data scientist, right? And again, I think part of that is because obviously my sort of career has you know, progressed and changed over time. But part of that is exactly to your point, right? Like the term data science is sexy now, and it just continues to explode and grow. So I think, you know, the type of work that I was doing, you know, years ago was very much data science work, but I would never have considered myself a data scientist, right? I mean, I think, you know, I sort of would have thought of that as something that's, you know, kind of a niche part of computer science, right? And really kind of, you know, sort of, you know, maybe even just focused on the machine learning part of, you know, sort of high-end theoretical machine learning. Because obviously, you know, where statistics and machine learning sort of meld and the distinction between them is a whole different bag of worms, which we can get into, but to stick to this topic for right now. Yeah, I think it, you know, I actually saw a lot of this progression, right, of data science becoming more sexy play out in a sort of very real way, actually at Palantir. So, Palantir is, so currently I'm at Komodo Health. I've been here for about a year. But prior to that, I was at Palantir for about 4 years. And, you know, Palantir is a company who has just, a lot of, you know, sort of naturally, right? You get a pulse on sort of what's happening in a lot of, you know, enterprise industry, right? And, you know, and this is obviously sort of the IBM Watson, kind of fertile ground as well right now. And when I started at Palantir, you know, data science was kind of this, it was almost taboo, right? It was, you know, it was actually pretty counterculture and antithetical to, you know, the Palantir kind of ethos, right? Which was very much coming out of, you know, I won't go through the whole sort of PayPal, Palantir origin story, but coming out of PayPal, the idea was the reason that they were able to create a successful sort of money sending businesses because they were able to beat the Russian mob. They were able to beat the Russian mob because they actually sort of had this, you know, human computer symbiosis. So algorithms by themselves could not defeat the Russian hackers. But you combine sort of the best parts of what a computer does with a human, a lot of analogies to chess, which has, you know, similar, best computer with a decent computer, with decent human will beat the best of either. And that was kind of the ethos, right? So it's very much put the data in front of people, that data science in and of itself, you know, not so important, in fact, kind of taboo. Now, as kind of time passed, and part of this was Palantir's kind of evolution, and it grew more and more into the commercial space, whereas, again, not to completely side rail into the Palantir origin story, but started very much in the government space and kind of grew into the commercial space. And as it grew more and more into the commercial space, the analogy that I've always used is the government space is really, you know, how do you find the needle in the haystack, right? Because you're trying to follow this trail of information all the way to, you know, this needle that you're trying to find. Whereas the commercial space is how do you count the haystack, right? It's a very, very different types of use cases. And, you know, as I grew sort of in the commercial organization at Palantir Group, became more and more sort of focused on essentially data science, right? And sort of building out an understanding, right? How can we understand this? How can we model it? How can we think about it? You know, are there ways to predict things? And so I think just generally, as you know, just data and the commercial world's desire, right, to use their data more intelligently, I think that's really what's grown. And then, you know, like anything, I think there becomes a little bit of a snowball effect, right? People get some amount of success with it, which then leads to being some amount of coverage about that success, which then leads, you know, another CTO or CEO somewhere else saying, hey, we have a lot of data, right? Like, why aren't we getting a lot out of it? So then they pour more money, you know, more resources and more effort into building it out, right? And this whole thing just kind of snowballs and grows. And, you know, like anything else, I think eventually, you know, it will settle a little bit and not be quite as sexy and hot. But, you know, data is not going away. And we will, you know, as a society, continue to collect more and more data. So, you know, the idea of how do I use that data effectively, right? I think that's certainly here to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting. Yeah, it's a great insight. And I think that it's, as you say, it's almost just terms and I don't know, coining terms and things that kind of, you know, make things sound a bit sexier, don't they, and stuff. But like you say, the evolution, and if you get down to kind of the brass tacks of things, it's solving problems using data. It's just the scale now of the data that we're able to collect is why I think it is so sexy, because if you kind of solve these problems, you know, I suppose on a corporate level, fiscally, the impact that can potentially have can be phenomenal. The, you know, even on a philanthropic efforts, like the impact could be huge for solving these problems. So I think it's just because of the scale, like the reward is bigger now, I think, for in the data space, if that makes sense. And I think that's part of the kind of propaganda behind it as well.
Yeah, you have to be, you know, if you are sort of in the, you know, data science, analytics, whatever you want to call it, space, you have to be careful to yourself not get overly caught up in it. You know, I think it's pretty easy, you know, to sort of hear about, you know, some new deep learning, right, technique. And, you know, I think these words start to sort of invade, right, the nomenclature. And that's kind of what people want to see. And, you know, you can get caught up in sort of saying, oh yeah, like that's what we need to do. And in fact, I think, you know, one of the things that's also true is, I tend to think that there's kind of, an orthogonality, right, between the complexity of technique use and, the sort of maturity of the data and or use case that you're using it on, right? And that's not that, you know, compelling a statement, but I guess what I mean by that is if you're looking at data for the first time or kind of, you know, trying to use or go after some new use case, you know, if you're focusing on how you get from the 80% to the 85% or the 90%, rather than focusing on, am I even asking the right question? Then I think you're really doing yourself a disservice, right? Because, listen, like, you know, when you talk about sort of, you know, call it Google search algorithms or Amazon's, you know, suggestions, et cetera, I mean, they are like, they know the data really well, they know the use case really well, and they know sort of the reward of, right, if I can up that performance from, you know, in their cases, right, 99.5% to 99.6%, there's a very real, like, millions of dollars, right, in terms of what that would mean to them. And so for them, yes, right, like, you know, really sort of just invest in and get into that theoretical landscape of, right, how do we get to those higher levels of performance by really kind of upping the complexity of the technique. But, you know, if you're sort of predicting something or kind of using the data to solve some question or answer some question, and you don't even know if that question is valuable or if it's even the right question or if the data can support it and things of that nature, then, you know, really saying, hey, look, I was able to, you know, bump up the performance of this from, you know, 80 to 85%, as the case might be, right? Like, you know, I think you're losing the forest for the trees. And I think a lot of the, you know, convolution, you know, neural nets and all these things, right? Like, don't get me wrong, they have their place and they're very interesting. But I do think that's, again, one of the biggest things that I notice is people really getting sort of caught up in the sexiness and caught up in, you know, some of the big words that appear, and, you know, what they lose out on is really sort of that intuitive understanding of what am I accomplishing?
Yeah, it's actually something we talk quite a lot about actually throughout in various different cases about what is the end goal. A VC called Paige Craig, was an early investor in Twitter and stuff, was on the show, and he kind of kicked things off and was like the first person who was like kind of mentioning it. And he obviously was on a different take, but his whole thing was about what do you look for in a startup founder if you're going to invest in them. And he basically said, you know, the number one thing that I kind of look for when you have, you know, early stage company is their vision. Like, what is the actual vision behind what you're trying to build? Like, what's the end goal? Who's it for? You know, what is the complete vision here? Because he felt that vision is what's going to essentially drive the business forward, and it's going to act as kind of, you know, the marketing behind everything, and it's going to be the transparency about what you're trying to do, and it's going to guide you to get to the place that you want to be. And I always found that really interesting, and at the same time, incredibly correct, because that's applicable to everything, I think, and especially when you get into some of the complexities. And I talk with a lot of technical people these days, and this is kind of one thing that's very important that people, it's almost harder to remember that now, which is, yeah, it's just a telling of our times that, like, you know, this is where we're trying to get to. It used to be a lot easier, you know, I think that before we kind of had these capabilities just of scale that we do now because of the internet predominantly and technology. But it was very interesting that regardless, above all else, you know, that's what it is. That's what's going to drive you. It's that vision, understanding what needs to get done and how it's going to impact things. And that's what you need to work towards. And regardless of kind of the steps or the processes involved with getting to that point, just get to it. And that's business at the end of the day. That's corporate. That's what we need to do to solve these kind of problems. And it's very interesting that kind of that's essentially what you're saying. You know, a lot of the time it is necessary to be, you know, a good data scientist, and, you know, certainly someone who you'd kind of aim to recruit for. Yeah, and it's actually very simple, isn't it? At the end of the day, like, you have the technical skills, check, but this is where we're trying to get to. Can you just get there and have that clarity of thought? It's just fascinating to me that, you know, as complex as data and data science can be, it's the simple things like that that tend to still matter the most, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so true. It's when candidates come to Komodo Health, a common question that I get asked is, what do we look for? What do I look for in candidates? And so there's really three things, right? So the first being, you know, the technical chops, right? So, you know, if you have brilliant ideas, but you can't actually sort of self-iterate, and there's not kind of that ability to actually put your fingers on the keyboard and bang out some code, it just is really hard to be effective, right? So so that's kind of the first point. And again, it's not to necessarily say it needs to be at that sort of software engineering level, but like you need to be able to sort of be effective from that perspective. The second piece is on you know, some amount of analytical data science, you know, toolkit, chops, skill set, right? And you know, I don't particularly care you know, exactly what you know, what projection on the plane of all of like data, you know, using data to answer problems, right? Like, I don't exactly care where that comes in, whether it's, you know, more sort of computer science based, like machine learning, or if it's more kind of classical statistics, or even if it's kind of, you know, as we talked about, like computational engineering, right? Like, it doesn't really matter. It's just like, you clearly have that ability and that experience kind of doing analytical data science work, right? And then the third piece, which again then goes back to what we were talking about, is that vision, which I think is the perfect way to put it, right? Like, what am I actually doing here? What's the point of this? Am I asking the right question? And in that introspection and in that vision towards like what's the end goal, you know, can you sort of self-correct, right? Because a lot of data science, particularly when you're looking at sort of new data sets that have never been put together before, which again, I think is a lot of, you know, a lot of sort of new startup companies that are particularly in the data tech space, right? That's a lot of what this is. And that's certainly, you know, us here at Komodo Health. And so if you can't sort of have that ability to say, am I asking the right questions here? And am I actually kind of, is the work that I'm currently doing pushing towards that vision? Then it's also really hard to be effective, right? Because, you know, this is basically what allows you to, in a single person, be able to iterate quickly, which is sort of the name of the game, right? When it comes to, you know, how to do data science effectively within all the different elements of it, right? Whether it's, you know, actually forming the question, whether it's feature engineering, right? Whether it's model building, evaluation, kind of, you know, and even outside of anything that's predictive in nature, right? Even just understanding the data and kind of exploring it and enhancing it, all of those things, you know, really requires, in my mind, kind of you to have those three components. And it's hard, you know, getting sort of being able to check all three of those boxes is pretty difficult, because there are three boxes that are usually pretty, you get them from different places, right? I mean, that type of experience and that type of knowledge is not sort of a one-stop shop for how you can kind of gain those skills and that knowledge. So it's definitely tough, but if you can get there, then I think that's really what allows you to be, you know, be really effective.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. And as you say, a very difficult skill set to acquire. I have a perspective on it. I think that, you know, in order to be effective, I think the project at hand and understanding of what you're actually going to be working on, and that needs to kind of motivate you forward. Because I think if you're working on things from the other side of things, or from a technical perspective or a data complexity standpoint, I think it's harder to encapsulate, you know, the three points, as you mentioned, But I think if you approach something as, wow, this problem that needs solving is actually genuinely something that, you know, I'm interested in and I'd actually genuinely like to see solved anyway, so sure, I'd like to kind of do it. I think if you approach things from having that those motivations, I think your chances of kind of encapsulating the skill set that you mentioned is probably enhanced.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that's true of most, you know, most things that you can, I would say you can do in life, right? I mean, if you're passionate about it and you care about kind of what you're doing, then I think it will sort of drive you towards kind of what the, you know, what the things are that you need in order to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Thank you so much for taking the time. I could actually go
Absolutely.
On. I could go on for another like 5 hours, but I don't think that's the most productive way to spend our time. But hopefully, we can do it again soon. I genuinely enjoyed this one, so thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed it as well, and yeah, happy to to come on again.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud. Or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.